The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, Public Affairs for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. Today is Friday, March the 2nd, 2012. So here is March. Let's march right into March and see if we can at least stumble out of it somehow. I know April showers bring May flowers, but I'm not sure if they say anything about March, except this is Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director here with me, by the way, and he's got an insightful comment about March.
Well, actually, it's not so much insightful as I'm really still kind of wondering why our winter was so mild, and like a lot of people, I'm poised for the winter to go a little bit longer, and maybe we'll get some blizzards in April. So that's what we're marching into.
Well, I have a little environmental tip and a tip for Michigan planters, especially if you have maybe a second home on the western part of the state, maybe as far north as Traverse City, or even in the Upper Peninsula. You know, they have these sort of planting zones based on winter temperatures, because summer is almost always good for growing anything.
Sure.
And the state of Michigan office just changed all the zones to one higher. In other words, over the last 10 years, Michigan average temperatures in the winter have been 6 to 8 degrees warmer. So it qualifies every zone, especially the ones further north and in Upper Peninsula, to go one zone higher. So,
which means it's a little longer period for planting.
Yeah, in fact, in Traverse City now, even though they're under a ton of snow today, but they're technically now in the same environmental zone as the Detroit area.
Well, that's good.
And because
that's
of the rising
country.
Temperatures.
They have a lot of
probably
winery.
Helps wine, I would think.
I have a question for you. Are you recovered from voting day on Tuesday?
Well, we're going to get into that. Yes, I want to mention that today, though, as long as we did mention the date, March 2nd.
Oh, sorry.
Dr. Seuss, this is his birthday, real name Theodore Geisel. And he was born in 1904, so he would have been 108 today.
Right.
And today is the day that the 3D movie, animated movie, The Lorax, is going to appear in the theaters. And it's interesting that that's been somewhat controversial, although everything seems to be these days.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to attack everything politically. That's the political environment. That the Republicans are saying that The Lorax is all nothing but a support for tree hugger environmentalist liberals,
yeah,
too, you know. And well, that's the way Dr. Seuss wrote it, some appreciation for our natural environment before it's all gone. That's the essence of the book that he wrote way back in the late 40s,
sure,
or early 50s. Nonetheless, it's also got 70 product placements which means that there are cars like an animated Mazda SUV, and it says Mazda on it, you know. So it, there's identification of these commercial products, more than 70 of them.
They cost a lot
and
of money.
And so, hey, capitalism is alive and well, yeah. So we can't criticize that. They said, well, you know, even probably Dr. Seuss himself, Theodore Geisel, wouldn't have been against that because the first movie that was made of his books, and I can't remember the title of it now, but it was a live-action movie.
Was
that
it
was
The Cat
made.
In the Hat?
No. It was before Jim Carrey got involved with those.
Well, they had animated versions, too,
yeah.
Sure.
But no, something in the 1950s was based on one of his books, and it broke records as the most merchandised film of its time in the 1950s.
Wow.
Nobody had ever merchandised that much of a movie, and Geisel, I guess, was either the scriptwriter or at least had executive producer rights, and he approved of it. So he didn't see anything wrong with that. Well, and I think it's because it's the message that matters, and the products are there, but the products are all around us anyway in our environment. So would a product sell better being seen and identified and remembered in a movie that you loved? Perhaps. At least manufacturers think so.
Absolutely. And it seems like there's an unspoken almost endorsement by if it's something you love, you can relate to it. Sure.
Unless it's too blatant. If you actually do notice the name Mazda, without my having told you in advance,
sure.
on the animated SUV in this, then you might say, well, that's a little over the edge.
Well, you know what I always
say. But if you don't think about it directly, maybe it does hit you subconsciously. But
subtlety is the key to emphasis.
Mm,
hey, so did the Republicans rhyme when they were talking about Dr. Seuss? Because that would have been interesting if they could put their criticism in the form of a rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yeah.
Well,
the objective critics said, pretty good movie, not fantastically great, not, you know, you probably want to go see it or take your kids to it. It's not offensive. And so, you know, even the same prognosticators, like on Fox News, because they got a 24-hour news channel, they have to complain about something.
Oh, absolutely.
So they complained, you know, heavily about, what was the last one? You know, just slipped from my head.
A hit movie?
Avatar. Yeah, it was. Oh, it was a Muppet movie.
Oh, of course.
The last Muppet movie was supposedly the bad guy was an oil company executive, and they wanted to tear down the Muppet Theater or something
sure.
in order to drill for oil there. And so, of course, that was an attack against the rich.
Well, whatever.
You got to attack somebody.
They're
you know, no matter who you put as the bad guy, then all of a sudden the people in that category
this
are going to object.
This represents whatever,
so,
sure, and they run with it.
You know, sure. I mean, you know, but why make a big deal like it's a liberal plot or a conservative plot, I think. And here's my conservative plot comments. We're going to go back to the election. I hope you did vote, even though it wasn't necessarily consequential, depending on what you wanted to vote for, but there were some local issues on some of the nearby community ballots that everybody could have voted for. And I noticed in Grosse Pointe, they passed library millage, and that was good. Something like 3-1. But,
good.
You know, only a small percent of Michigan voters, shame on you, actually went to the polls. They were expecting 15%. I think fewer than that showed up. Sure, it really wasn't. There wasn't much going on for the Democratic voter, for somebody who votes on the Democratic Party in a regular business, basis. It wasn't really for them because even the party said, "Well, it's all just cosmetic. If you want to vote for Obama or uncommitted, doesn't really matter because we're going to actually make the decision in our precinct meetings, our Democratic Party precinct meetings, which will be held in a month or so, and so it's completely non-binding. So as a Democratic voter, if your vote's really not going to help much, and they're not going to report it much." Then maybe you wouldn't be compelled to go. However, that Republican primary, who do you think won? Now, I asked my daughter, and I will use her as a sounding board frequently.
Absolutely.
As an educated person in her 30s, 14 years teaching Southfield Public Schools, science department at her middle school. Anyway, she wasn't sure who won. And she voted, but she wasn't sure. Now, she's very busy, so she probably didn't catch the news.
Right.
But she I don't know. What are the names of those guys again? Oh, no. So I'm not. I know she voted. I don't know if she voted Republican or not. You know, that's her business. But well, so most people would say if they watch the news, Mitt Romney won. Okay, because he seemed to get the most votes all around the state of Michigan. Well, that's one criteria. However, what really matters is not the popular vote, and only about 10% Democrats crossed over, even though Rick Santorum actually had a commercial asking Democrats to vote for him, which just boggles my mind. But a few Democrats were going to vote for him because, you know, to mess up the Republican Party.
They felt
that he was, yeah, because he asked. Well, that's a good reason to especially mess him up, because they thought he might be the one easiest to beat because of some of his outrageous extremist points of view. Mm. If you think Obama's extreme. Well, anyway, nonetheless, I mean, you can't say that Rick Santorum is middle of the road. You can never say that about him in any regard. And middle of the road is, you know, as long as you're exactly on that line, you won't get hit by a car. But otherwise, it's a pretty dangerous place to be.
Absolutely.
I think so. Maybe it's better to be more on one side or the other, or all the sides at the same time. Nonetheless, here's the fact, okay? I heard reported, and this is on Channel 7, and they did say, as well as saying, oh, Romney won, they did say accurately that he was awarded two of all the Michigan delegates that will go to the Republican National Convention who will vote for him on the first ballot because he got the plurality. He didn't get a majority. So if you think winning an election means you got more than 50%, no, he didn't. But he got the highest number, but not the majority, and that's a plurality. So he would get those two votes. Now, before I go further, let me just update today, if you're listening to the news this morning, there's a legal challenge among Republicans, in fact, because Santorum's people are saying, look, we almost got the same percentage. Romney about, I think, 42%, Santorum about 37%. So both of them got about 40% of the vote of the people voting in the Republican primary. Okay. They said, well, you really should give one vote to Romney and one vote to Santorum since they were so close. Okay. Well, what are they going to do? Well, the Republican Party had stated a month ago that winner take those two. Okay, now we have about 30, I think, total delegates that are selected for the Republicans here throughout the precincts of Michigan. I don't remember exactly how many precincts. That's not the issue right now. But Attorney General Mike Cox, who's a Republican, he's on like the coordinating committee for the Republicans in terms of this election debate thing. Delegate selection. And he felt that it should be that he and this small group, the small committee, decided after the election, that the rules should be changed to split up those two votes among, well, certainly among two people that got almost the same amount, the two top people getting almost the same amount. Even though he said he's not a Santorum supporter. But that's what he thought was fair. Well, the Republican Party overall, the bigwigs, the people that really run it, told Mike Cox and his little committee, no, we're not going to do it that way. We said a month before that whoever got the largest number would get two. And then where did the rest come from? The rest go to the winner of each precinct, or the highest number of votes in each precinct throughout Michigan, north, south, east, west, all the little precincts. Okay. So some people, including myself, wanted to find out how many delegates did Mitt Romney actually get, Santorum, Gingrich, and Ron Paul, of course, because we went to his presentation, his rally.
Sure.
Heard his speech on Tuesday, and I'll make comments about that later. But I wanted to find out.
Monday.
It was Monday, before the election. And I think that affected the numbers in Dearborn, which I'll talk about later, too.
Good.
But in any event, you call the State of Michigan Election Bureau, who they have all the numbers and all the ballots. And the question was, how many delegates does Romney get? Now today, they're fighting over whether or not Romney and Santorum should
split
the top two, the two just given to the big winner, the biggest winner, or not. But it looks like the Republican Party has clearly ruled that we're not going to split them. That wasn't the idea before. Well, the state of Michigan has said, and who paid for this election? The state of Michigan, $11 million. We don't know who got the delegates. We're turning over all the votes, all the records of the votes to the Republican Party.
That's a great idea.
Because they don't know where the precincts are.
Mm.
And they don't break down the votes, I guess, by these precincts.
You ever heard of the expression, blind leading the blind?
Well, my problem with this is, can Republicans, can anybody really trust the big shot organization to not cheat? How transparent is it? Shouldn't the state of Michigan, who paid the $11 million for it, shouldn't they figure out who won each delegate for the benefit of the Republicans, but also for the benefit of all the rest of us that actually voted in this, who are citizens of Michigan, and that should be totally transparent. No, they turned over all the records of all the voters and all the votes to the Republican Party, and they say, well, it's going to take us a little while to figure this out. It might be a month or so.
Right.
Well, how do I know then, or how does even any of these candidates know how they did? That's unbelievable. It's like delaying the national vote for 2 months or 3 months, you know, the federal vote for president. I mean, it's unconscionable in a democracy that unless there's, you know, some sort of disaster, a tsunami hits Michigan or something, that would keep that from happening. So as a Republican, I'd be very upset about that. And we just don't know. The guesses are that, well, Romney might take three delegates from three precincts in the Detroit area, but Santorum's going to take three that they think are heavily Santorum voters in Grand Rapids. But nobody actually knows where the little precinct lines are because they're not the same as the districts, which are all gerrymandered by the Republicans. And so they're all changed, and they don't fit the guidelines anymore. And so the state of Michigan throw up its hands. And, of course, they don't have any government workers left,
right?
You know, because they cut back there and they cut back their benefits. So some people were looking for work. So they just, well, let the Republicans figure out who got what delegates. Well, the Republicans, again, just like the party leaders, they might tend to make decisions in favor of
who they want.
Who they want.
Sure.
And I think that's probably Romney. He's the mainstream choice among mainstream consistent Republicans.
Sure.
I'm not overstating that, I hope, folks. I think that's quite clear.
Right.
Very upset about that. And of course, what's the impression you get of even if you listen to the news on this state, well, not here, we tell the real deeper facts, but if you watch the news on television about Michigan or the Fox News or MSNBC news about the election, you're not getting the whole story because nobody really knows who won. And certainly nobody got a majority, but they don't even know how many delegates. And that's what matters, is the delegates that they got assigned to them, not the popular vote. Now, in some states, you can set up a primary, and this is decided by law, in which winner take all. So all those delegates, however many there are, would go to Romney. Okay? Other states say, we're going to split the popular vote and divide up the delegates statewide by that percentage.
Okay.
So statewide, for example, Ron Paul got 11% of the vote. Well, he'd get 11%, rounded up or down, of the delegates.
So like therefore, three or four.
No. Sure. In Michigan, it's whoever got a majority of the votes in each precinct, or plurality in each precinct.
Okay.
Oh, my God. And the state of Michigan doesn't know how to count that up or figure that out.
But that shouldn't be...
Unbelievable.
Don't you agree that at this point, and I mean, we've had problems with, I mean, the Bush, all the problems we had with those elections, shouldn't we, with all of our technology, be able to figure this out? I mean, am I naive? Are there so many problems with this that this should happen?
Well, it was brought up at the tax forum today, is that the state of Michigan, since they've laid off so many government workers and all these offices, they don't have the resources to keep up with all the notifications and information and research that they should be doing for the good of the people.
Sure.
You know, to undercut government workers, folks, and here comes opinion, if we haven't already said a few, and you know that any opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, although I hope so, to a certain extent anyway. But, you know, they just don't have enough people to do these things. At the tax forum this morning, it was brought out, and I knew about it because a story broke in the Detroit News in the last week. People who are getting state-paid pensions, federal workers, teachers, state-paid pensions, were having withholding taken out of their paychecks,
right,
their pension checks. All of a sudden, poof, starting in January, you lost 50 to a couple hundred bucks. They took out the maximum amount of withholdings, even though the new law to tax pensions, 4.35%, which you won't have to really pay technically until next year when you fill out your 2012 tax form. But nonetheless, they have to take out the withholding, so they take out the maximum. Some seniors who were born before 1946 don't have to pay anything. So those people are losing hundreds of dollars a month for this whole year and didn't realize it because of the automatic withholding. Did they notify anybody about that? No. The Michigan Treasury Office didn't tell anybody that that was going to start happening and that they would not do the research and figure out which of these people would, in effect, not have to pay anything of the 4.35, those born before 1946, for example. So everybody, every senior, everybody receiving a state pension loses the full amount, even if they qualify for the deduction. There's people between 46 and 52, I think, born between 1946 and 52 that would get a credit, but before 1945, wouldn't they pay anything? So a lot of people are very mad now that they're checking their, looking at their checking accounts or savings accounts where the money came in electronically. And, oh my God, at the end of the year, I'm going to be down. In my case, it's going to be something like $350, $400 a month. So at the end of the year, almost $4,800, $5,000. And whether or not, I'm not going to tell all my tax details, but whether or not I will get some of that back. That's right. But they shouldn't be taking so much out. And they didn't tell anybody that you could make a change yourself in advance. They just started taking it out.
So as it was explained to you, is that because of lack of manpower?
Yeah, they just don't have the people in the Treasury office to do the computation. And they came to the conclusion, which I've heard some, that everybody should take the initiative for themselves. Let your legal advisor, your tax advisor, tell you what to do. Well, all of us meet with our legal advisors every month, if not every week, right? Yeah, we have people on top of this, or we have our people. We pay big salaries to people that keep telling us good, where we stand with our taxes every single month. No, of course not. Only maybe the top 1% have that kind of, and even other people that they see a tax advisor once a year, mm-hmm. When they have to do their taxes. They don't ask them to give them ongoing updates about what they should be doing. And this came very quick. I mean, nobody expected it would happen. But the line from the treasurer's office is, well, we don't have the people to do it, so we haven't been able to notify them. Don't worry. If you just wait a year, whatever is appropriate, you'll get back a refund check.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so the state gets my $5,000 for a whole year and won't give me any interest if I get it all back.
Right.
Okay, so what a nice little loan to the state from all the pensioners who are getting this deduction, whether they would finally have to pay it or not, just popped right in there. So it's a kind of blasé, anti-general public feeling that was to excuse this. He said, you already have your tax advisors. They're going to tell you what to do. No, that's not the way it works out. So, but I do think it's a personnel issue too, even if you can explain it philosophically. So that was the answer about who won the election. We don't know yet.
Right.
We just don't know who's going to get the delegates. The odds are, I would bet, you just don't know. How many precincts are there? Is there the same number of people in each precinct, Republican Party precinct? Will it split the delegates? Well, it should just be like the normal vote. No. Again, it's the plurality in that precinct gets that delegate. So it could be that Romney will get 80% of the delegates, or it could be Santorum will get 80%, which has nothing to do with the popular vote in the state. Is that appropriate? Of course, again, what sort of rules would you prefer for the Michigan presidential primary? my feeling, as I've stated before, is we should not have a primary.
Right.
Let the parties choose among themselves. In this case, it's going to go to the Democratic precinct committees, meetings to decide. Republicans are going to make all their decisions based on the votes, of course, but in their own precincts, too. And then let's not forget, there's a couple thousand uncommitted Republicans votes. And those are spread out, a couple thousand in Dearborn alone, that people didn't choose any of the above.
And that's the primary. And what happens after the primary is we whittle it down to the prime candidate. And, of course, the people that were following Ron Paul and Gingrich, they're going to go over to somebody. I guess what I'm saying is that this is the way we see things now is not the landscape we'll see even in a few months.
No, the problem is that if it's Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich, or some people voted Michelle Bachmann and other people that were there, but they don't have active campaigns. So those are going to be uncommitted too.
Herman Cain, sure.
Right, Herman Cain. Those are going to be, so the Republican Party precinct meetings are going to decide who gets those. But no, the only committed delegates on the first ballot at the Republican National Convention will be from Michigan, will be those that actually won in the precinct, got the plurality in that precinct. Could be all for Romney. Could be more for Santorum than Romney. We just don't know because it's not broken down by precincts, and the state of Michigan has thrown up its hands and said, we can't do it.
Right.
We can't figure this out. And the state put out $11 million for this, and they can't even tell us now who got the most delegates. Is that the fair way to go? No, because that system is set up so that the big winners will be the person who is the most popular in every precinct, and the second or third or fourth highest voters will be completely cut out. That's how the Michigan law is set up. And who put this law in place? The Democrats and the Republicans. They voted it. It's not in the Constitution. I don't think it is. It's voted into law. The Michigan primary is voted into law by our friendly legislature. And maybe a few years ago, but that's what they're using currently. And is it wrong? Is it undemocratic? Is it unfair? Absolutely. Okay. And it doesn't give fair representation to anyone other than the top candidate or candidates at the Republican National Convention. It just sweeps aside anybody that came in typically further down second, third, or fourth. So that's
just got to be loud.
Just not right.
Louder than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
If the Republican Party and the Republican Party membership, you know, just join the party, get a membership card, go to the precinct meetings, whether it's called the Republican Club of Dearborn. I know there's a Dearborn Democratic Club.
Right.
But, you know, they have regular meetings, folks. Go to those if you're a true blue Republican or Democrat or you want to work within the system there. And that's where you have the power to make the decisions. But, you know, even there's not a lot of equity for anybody except the biggest candidate. And therefore, that's why I have that opinion. Why have the primary if the party leaders are going to make the decision for the top person anyway and forget about the percent of influence of anybody else?
You think it's just window dressing?
It's publicity for the Republican candidates.
Sure.
They get their names out there more, whether it's on TV ads or whatever. And so there you go.
And they were thrilled there was no primary for the Democrats.
Yep, and he's going to keep talking a while, folks.
Yeah.
Here's Jay's thoughts on a presidential primary in Michigan. Number one, you have to say, since Santorum and Romney split 40-40, most voters believe TV ads. These are the only people worth voting for. Why? Because they're on television. It used to be said in marketing, in fact, years ago, if it's not on TV,
it
doesn't exist.
Right.
And so these other candidates don't really exist. They're not serious. They're not on television. Well, it takes millions of dollars to pay for those TV ads, which how often were they running? Oh, my God. Last weekend in Michigan, again, most of them were from the super PACs, and super PACs don't represent rich people, usually a rich person. You know, that's it. One person pretty much bankrolls each super PAC. Romney has his primarily one-person super-rich PAC. For example, I just know that just the name Alderson, Sam Alderson, is the primary donor to a super PAC that right now is supporting Newt Gingrich. Now, Gingrich didn't campaign in Michigan. We didn't see any spots because they didn't spend any money on this. He's going to try to win Georgia or something, where it's his home state, I believe. Alderson said, hey, I got $25 million. That's my personal fortune, $25 million. So I'm going to give $100 million to Newt. Okay. And, that's kind of nice. $100 million. That buys a lot of TV spots, a lot of existence on television, if they want to spend it that way. And again, Santorum has got a super PAC that is primarily one super rich person. And but just because they got the ads on TV, whether they're attack ads or supportive ads, because they got the ad there, you exist. And if you can exist as much as the other person, then by God, 80% of the voters go that way. You know, people don't read books, obviously, or nonfiction newspapers, magazines. The majority of people don't listen to this show. Okay.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, really. Of course not, you know. But these people should be able to influence more people. You know, right. There should be a personal influence of the people that really do know and read and study. I don't know. It doesn't seem to work that way. So I think there has to be, here comes my opinion as media teacher for years, and it's been proven, other people said this too, all TV spots should be banned for political candidates. If they're 30 seconds or a minute long, it's too short. It's too short to tell any substantial, objective information about the candidate.
Yeah, but you can sling a lot of mud in 60
seconds. Let's ban negative ads.
Sure.
You can only talk about your own candidate. Can we do that? Is that against freedom of speech? It's good for democracy to only talk positively about your own candidate. But you know, you can't stop the negative stuff. It'll start being put on Facebook or blogged or tweeted or something.
Good point.
Or they'll send it around by direct mail to your home. At least cut down on their access to these little spot ads that really tell you nothing other than the candidate exists.
Right.
Doesn't mean they exist in a good or bad way, in fact, but if they exist, you probably vote for them, right? If they don't exist, you won't vote for them, even though they're legally on the ballot and they have points of view. I think I mentioned exit polls say that 10% of voters in the Republican primary were Democrats, half of whom voted for Santorum. Who did the other half vote for? We don't know. Nobody asked the question, the exit poll question, how many independents, people that call themselves not a Democrat, not a Republican, but a free-thinking person that might vote one way or the other way or follow the best candidate, how many independents voted in the Republican primary? Nobody asked that.
That's a good question.
I can't find it anywhere. So, and then who did they vote for, too? Let's talk about Ron Paul now. The Ron Paul rally in Dearborn, packed house. I saw them being seated in the balcony.
Standing room only was how it was reported.
Yeah, I think it was absolutely filled. There's a great great objective story done by our friend J. Patrick Pepper.
That's a good story.
At the Press and Guide, Road to the White House. Ron Paul in Dearborn got 16% of the vote, but that's 5% more than statewide.
Right.
I wonder how he did in more conservative areas like in Grand Rapids and so on.
That's a good question.
I don't know there. As he points out here, and it was true because I was there. In fact, I didn't stay with where the reporters were, which were sort of corralled up on stage. I actually sat in the middle of the audience and talked to people.
Good.
All kinds of people, as he points out here, young, old. Yes, there was a large number of Arab Americans and young Arab Americans. And it's a real problem to get young people to vote.
Absolutely.
So I could see by that gathering that all the polls that said the youth of America, Democrat, Republican, Independent, they will support Ron Paul to a very, very high extent. Now, they typically don't vote, or they typically don't even register.
Right.
But if they had a candidate they wanted to vote for, such as Obama in 2008, they will register and they will vote. But it has to be something really special going on before they're attracted. Well, I thought it was wonderful to see that many young people. And what was great about Ron Paul's address, he did no attacks on any other candidates. Of course, he did suggest that his programs were better than Barack Obama's, have in place. But he didn't use the whole time just attacking Barack Obama in any negative way. He is not that kind of politician. I mean, I've seen and heard this guy at other times. He doesn't spend his time tearing other people down. He tries to explain his views, which are an interesting combination of many liberal views and also many Republican views or more conservative views. As you know, you would have to call it libertarian because he did run with the Libertarian Party for president in 1988. And he really, his beliefs do overlap with the Republicans, maybe more than the Democrats, but he's still different. And tremendous support that I saw there. Now, 1,200 people is not everybody. It's just a little more than who voted for him in Dearborn, although I was sitting next to a guy from Garden City and a young person from Southfield. So they came from all over for this event.
This was the only Detroit area.
Yeah, it was only Detroit area
demonstration or whatever.
Right.
And one of the people who introduced him was the publisher of the Arab American News.
Yes.
Which I thought, and I, from what I understand, he was very passionate.
Yeah, and that was reported here in the story, too. It's good to mention. I don't know how many people read the Arab American News in the area. So, well, I'm not an Arab American, but well, maybe not. But they endorsed Ron Paul for president, not just for the primary, but they thought he would make the best president of the United States.
Sure.
And, of course, there's reasons for that, You know, everybody loves liberty. It's amazing because I saw not just Arab Americans there, but people of all backgrounds and all types of people. And it was a big come together. You know, it's like we have to respect individual religions and individual rights. And everybody applauded. And, you know, there was no division there. And I'm thinking, if only America could be like that, you know, to have that open view but respect for personal liberties and freedoms, however you want to live your life, you know, and whether, you know, whether or not you want big government or little government, that's another issue. Ron Paul, I thought in Dearborn, people might think, well, you know, he's against Social Security and he's going to take away my Medicare. And yeah, he wants a different system, but he promised, and it's been in his statements in his platform for a year now since he started campaigning, he's not going to change anybody's entitlements who already gets them, because that would just not be fair. They plan for that. They, you know, he's not going to, unlike the state of Michigan that decided to attack people's pensions who already are on, are already receiving their pensions. Which is just not right. But no, he said, no, we've got to, it gives people options. And if they want to invest their own money in different ways, either for health care or retirement, we should allow that. So I really wish there were more silver haired people there. But it was very well covered. And by the way, J. Patrick Pepper was also taking video. And I think you'll see me in one of his shots if he used it. I didn't see it, but pressandguide.com. He was walking down the lines because they had us, before we went into the auditorium, they had us all gathered in lines in one of their studio A or whatever, one of their multipurpose rooms at the center. And so he was there just sort of doing a tracking shot just to show how many people are really there. I mean, sometimes in the auditorium with this dark, you can't tell how many people are there, but I've got a couple shots, stills also, that showed how packed it was. It took me 20 minutes to get out of there. Of course, everybody left at once.
Sure.
And then there's only so many exit roads, you know, from the center. But it was a great event, and I learned a lot. I did hear one person that I knew from the college here say, oh, I didn't think he was that exciting a speaker. They wanted him to go on the attack and say a lot of nasty, crazy.
Sure.
He gave a wonderful presentation about his views and his perspectives and why it was important, and he gave reasons why. Okay, he wasn't using jingles and generalizations and scare tactics and that. And he definitely took the high road. And you say, well, that's why I didn't win. Well, I don't know. I hope not. I hope that's not the reason. I'm not saying we weren't endorsing anybody here. But it's rare that you see a candidate that is that gives that kind of presentation. And it's great for any candidate to come to Dearborn, of course.
Oh, yeah.
That's where we live.
That's,
you know,
all
thank
right
you.
In our lap, didn't it?
Yeah, thank you for coming here. Actually, it was organized by the Arab Student Union at University of Michigan, Dearborn.
And that includes Mahdi Abdullah, who is the president of the...
Right. Although the former president, Hussein Saghir, that's S-A-G-H-I-R, he is at MSU as a medical student now, but he's actually doing his residency at Wayne State, or no, at Henry Ford Hospital,
okay.
Or is it Oakwood? Anyway, he said, it's the same one we're Dr. Ron Paul did his residency.
Interesting.
Back in 1962. He was right here in Michigan, living here, doing his medical residency. You know, he became a gynecologist, but he was. I wonder how many babies he delivered right here in Detroit.
62, I heard.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they all voted for him.
I don't know. Hey, my question was about, did Adam DeAngeli speak? Was
yes.
he part of it?
Okay. Yes. And it was thanks to Adam DeAngeli, who you know from some
He used to own a business in Ann Arbor, yeah. And now he's the coordinator for the state.
Right. And he's the one that, for Ron Paul, and he's the one that sent the email that detailed for me this crazy thing about the delegate selection. It's, you know, it won't necessarily represent any, you know, much of the vote except for Romney the way it is. In fact, he pointed out, hey, Ron Paul could still win some precincts because there's so many uncommitted. So he's recommending that, you know, Ron Paul supporters, if you weren't a member of the Republican Party before, just sign your name, join. There's no strings attached, you know, and start going to the precinct meetings and then vote since you're a member. Now, you can't, usually there's rules against this. I'm not sure how the Republicans do it. I know how the Democrats do. You can't join at that meeting where they're going to do the voting on who gets the delegate. They want you to be a member before.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
You don't want to pack the meeting with a whole bunch of people that aren't really, you know, a party member. They're just there to overset the vote in some particular way. So I don't know. But that's what he's recommending for Ron Paul supporters, or I'd say for Newt Gingrich supporters. Same thing goes. If you know, there's still time to get some delegates because of the crazy way that Michigan has done this Republican primary. And it's crazy, not because of the state of Michigan, but because it's the Democrats and Republicans that voted this primary into place. That's how they designed it, to protect themselves, to keep the power at the top. You know.
Well, you sound like you had fun.
Yeah.
Then you went to a tax thing.
Anyway, but good for Adam, because he pointed out that detail that I didn't know about the actual way things happen. I'm sure most people didn't, and most people, except for my daughter, thought that Romney won the primary, even, you know.
Well,
and
pick up a paper. That's the impression they'll give you. Mm-hmm. Now, Adam's sharp. He's young, and he's sharp, and he's got good ideas.
Yep. Okay, so let's look and see what else is going on in Dearborn in these papers. I think I hit the hot button things. I hope your hot button is not hurting at this point.
Right.
Let's see. Sunday Press and Guide. I thought it was interesting that there's several letters to the editor about the Goodwill store coming into West Dearborn.
I know.
Pretty well stated. Some people went in great depth. Peter Blohm, B-L-O-H-M, Dearborn resident and businessman, made a point-by-point, bullet-point type of document here talking about why Goodwill should just be allowed to get in there.
Well, you know, we didn't have an opportunity, I don't think, last week to talk about Sadeep had his particular take on it, and he was not in favor.
No, and he's on the Planning Commission. And so these people are responding to Sadeep, if he says it that way.
Sure.
Just chokes me up here. But, you know, and several people's comments even online to the commentary at the Press and Guide and Dearborn.patch.com commentaries on this generally are saying, you know, and the city just throwing up its hands, well, we can't do anything. The Planning Commission, they can do whatever they want. Well, as I think I said this last week, who needs the city council then? I mean, what good are they if everything happens out of their hands? They can't be blamed for anything, I guess, right? They can't. So they can always get reelected because they didn't do anything to get unelected.
Exactly.
I mean, this is crazy. Standing in the way of this. So the recommendation is, would that ninth person please show up at the next meeting and cast their vote?
There you go.
At least break the tie,
yeah.
You know, because I think Goodwill will just not do their project here. They're saying that they have other cities nearby that they will go to if they can't get this through, and I don't think they're going to wait much longer. They're ready to build another store.
Yeah.
Why? People want to buy lower-priced stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Recycle, reuse.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I mean, it's a philosophy that's gotten us through a lot of, you know, they don't have those same problems at Dearborn Heights City Council.
Oh no! Just tell us about Dearborn. You know, Dennis has the distinct honor, and they're paying a couple of pennies also, to be the Dearborn Heights area reporter now for the Dearborn Press and Guide newspaper.
Well, I'm at least covering city council. And they
at least that. Yes.
Well, they had the meeting on Wednesday because they had to push it up because of the primary election. And some interesting things. One thing that was interesting is council member Lisa Hicks Clayton has been appointed to the vacant spot on the Commission on Aging. And that's a 3-year term, and she'll fill that vacancy. And I mean, that covers a lot of ground. Obviously, Commission on Aging is a pretty generic term. There are also some things, you know, and you've been to city council meetings, Jay. You know that a lot of the things they're passing, for example, the fire chief, Gurkha, had a request to accept over $300,000 grant, a SAFER grant. And as you know, the council has to approve that. It's a request for accepting something.
Sure.
They have to look at the parameters, and they did accept that. One of the things that I thought was really interesting, and this was at the end of the meeting, was, and as I know that you're aware, when they have the census, often it's required that there's redistricting and consolidation of precincts. And there was a three-member committee, I think they call it the Election Commission, which included the clerk in Dearborn Heights, as well as the council chair, Ken Barron, and the mayor, Paletko, and they voted 2-1 in favor of the redistricting resolution. Mm-hmm. And the mayor decided he had voted against the motion, and his reasoning was that he felt, yes, it's a good cost-saving move by consolidating. At the same time, his real concern was that it would be an overcrowding of each precinct when people went to vote, and then maybe they'd look at all the people in line and say, well, I'm not going to stay, and they would leave. And that was his very real concern. Of course, the motion did pass, and it was approved. But that was one of the things that ended up, and it was at the end of the meeting. So, as I said, there's a lot of things that they want. And look, this is going to cost money. We need to do it. Or we have a grant for this, and we need to use the money on this project. So they vote on things that, in my opinion, a lot of times are already a foregone conclusion, but they have to go through this process. So I can't really give you my, it was pretty
nice to know
the highlight of it.
They're doing something.
They are very much doing something.
Are they delegating all of their decisions to their planning commission?
No, they're not.
I don't think they have too many commissions like Dearborn. I'm sure, of course, we're a larger city, but we seem to have an awful lot of different kind of commissions that have an awful lot of independent power. Now, I think the one about hiring, you know, that and salary adjustments and so on, that needs to be more independent. That you know, it looks bad when the city council or the mayor decides to raise their own pay.
Right.
You know, that just looks a little suspicious, you know. But when the recommendation comes from a group that should be impartial, even though they're appointed by the mayor in the first place. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that seems to be a little bit better. So we'll see what happens. I guess there might be one more time that the issue will come up at the Planning Commission. Everybody I've talked to, and again, I only talk to the people that agree with me, of course.
Well, yeah, that's, you taught me that.
But
that's
they, good. Yeah, it's too tough to talk to others. But
why muddy the equation, mm-hmm. right?
But they seem to want that goodwill there. It's a vacant building. Yes, there has to be a minor little problem with building a wall to separate the area where the donations might be dropped off from public view, because it might look a little messy at times. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Other people have done this. Not like this is the very first Goodwill store.
You know, they had the thing about getting 70 people who live nearby, and it would be on Park Street, which is just south of the railroad tracks there.
Yep.
And I know somebody lives on Park Street, and they told me just last week, nobody asked them.
Well, they were one of the 70, the chosen 70.
Well, they, you know, if you just went down every house on the on one side and the other side of Park there, I don't know which, I suspected that the count was like maybe somewhat east of that street there. What is that, Military? Oh, Monroe.
No,
it's further down. Yeah. Well, you know, anyway, so I don't think they would ask everybody. I think they probably just did a radius, which doesn't mean everybody on Park.
I think it is Military, because that goes. And didn't you say that the officials, authorities at the Sacred Heart Church right across the street were very much in favor of this?
Yeah, they put a letter of recommendation in from the church itself.
I think that's wonderful endorsement. Sure. I
guess they weren't worried about poor people being around on Sundays and showing up at church.
Yeah.
unable to make a donation, but still, okay. Let's talk about the tax forum today, since it did happen for 2 hours this morning at the Henry Ford Centennial Library. It was primarily organized by our local representative, George DeRaney, who will be here on this show in 2 weeks.
March
2 weeks from today, 16th.
16th? Okay.
2 and 14 make 16.
You got it.
Okay. And so I saw him and talked to him, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to talk about taxes and other things that he really has no control over. Why? Because he's a Democrat, and he's totally against all the tax changes, as were all the other Democrats there in Wayne County. Commissioner and chair of the commission, Gary Warrenchuk, was there, and of course he's a Democrat now. And let's see, Bob Costin was from the Dearborn Heights area, and a lot of them just sort of dropped in for a minute. Senator Morris Hood,
interesting,
but then he had to leave quickly because his niece was getting married all of a sudden. He said, at the directly at the city county building or whatever.
I love spontaneous weddings.
Yeah, his niece. Yeah. To leave a political meeting for his niece.
Well, I respect that.
It must be a very close family. That's nice. And he was wearing about a $1,000 suit, I thought. I don't usually see anybody wearing a suit like that. But, yeah, I go to a wedding, got to dress up a little.
Yeah.
Let's see. There was the fellow from Allen Park. His first name is Andrew.
Okay.
A representative from Taylor. And they all spoke very well. Well, I try to keep up on this in advance, so I didn't learn too much. But what I was there for as a reporter was to listen to the people who were asking questions. The second hour was primarily questions from people in the audience. All kinds of comments, of course, mainly from retirees and pensioners. Where'd my money go?
Yeah.
Why are they taking this out? But a lot of people, God bless them, they said, look, we came to the meeting. What can we do? What can we do to change things? And, of course, DeRaney said, well, you could vote for someone other than Republicans in November, except we're already there. You know, if you're from this area, if we represent you, you know, well, we will vote the way you want. And we will change things if we ever get a majority.
Sure.
So he said, if you've got a friend or a family member living up north in Michigan, in one of these districts that has a Republican representative or Republican senator, get to them, you know. And say, look, do you realize what the changes have done to hurt you and me down here? You know, because you can't, I mean, you know, majority of people have voted Democrats into being their representatives and their senators in this Detroit metro area, and they had nothing to do with, I mean, maybe one or two of them on a single vote might have crossed the lines. But basically, it was pretty much all Republicans voting for it and all Democrats voting against. Every single one of these tax changes, every change in deductions for seniors, deductions for contributing to nonprofit institutions in Michigan, all these things that were eliminated and that will cause a lot of trouble for a lot of people. But they went on, or I made a list. Where's my list? Okay.
Uh-oh, here comes the list.
Hey, activist, do you want to be more active? Okay, you're listening to the journal. That's wonderful. But these ideas are just bouncing around in your head back and forth. But just so you should vote. If you really want to get organized, maybe you want to do a recall. But, of course, they didn't suggest that because in this area, they don't want to be recalled. They're the Democrats that didn't vote for any of this stuff. Number two, you could join a party if there's one you like. Although one of the women there, one of the attendees, said, is there a political party that doesn't play these kind of games that would actually be for the people? So I'll vote for a party that is a common sense political party. You know, why don't they write laws that are written in English? Because we actually heard and we saw a PowerPoint on the new tax laws. Who can figure it out even from the PowerPoint description?
Was that the point of the PowerPoint? In other words, they wanted to show you the confusion, or were they trying to explain it?
No, but the audience still was left fairly confused. They just got the bottom line, which was they are going to be hurt badly by these changes, and businesses are saving billions of dollars. It's a cut of $1.6 billion for business tax in Michigan. And it's interesting that some companies, big companies, because they're it's only the only businesses that have to pay are some sort of type C corporations. And interestingly, Chrysler Corporation is a limited liability corporation, or LLC.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay anything.
That's interesting.
LLCs in Michigan pay no taxes whatsoever at any time, place. Well, why is that? You know, well, supposedly they're job providers, right?
Right.
And
but isn't an LLC status a relatively new?
I don't know what it means. I really don't understand that, you know.
Okay.
Or why they somehow qualify for not having to pay taxes. I understand they're a job provider. And yes, cars are being sold more. Somehow people finding the money for that. And so the auto business in Michigan is improving slightly.
Sure.
Because of increased sales. And they are hiring more there. But in other businesses, the corporations, the businesses are making big profits, but the demand's not there because people don't have money to buy the products, so they're not hiring. They're sitting on their profits.
Mm-hmm.
They're enjoying their profits.
Sure.
You know, most businesses have made, the large businesses, last year made 20% profit and, you know, nationwide. And it's, but they're sitting on the money. They're not hiring more people because they say, well, look, nobody's buying our stuff. Of course, I would say, maybe you're not making the right stuff then, you know. But it's true that that's why it's the whole argument of, do we make things better for the business people so they get higher profits and they will automatically do the right thing with it? Or do we give the money to the workers who are actually the majority who are doing the buying? You know, that's the federal government incentive money primarily goes. Okay, some of it's gone to the banks. Ooh. Some of it went for loans to the auto companies. But, you know, it needs to go to the people, you know, not tax credits, not tax increases. Anyway.
So an LLC is not a person like a corporation, right?
It is a corporation.
It's a limited liability, so I don't think it's the same thing.
Well, but they still can say whatever they want to.
Okay.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood to talk for them. You know?
Oh, yeah. So oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Good call.
You could support lobbyist organizations. If you know of an organization, because lobbyists, boy, they have the ear of the representatives. There's a lot of money going on there. You could volunteer with any of these organizations I mentioned, whether it's a political party or a lobbyist organization. One lobbyist would be like Sierra Club, though, you know. You could volunteer and work on environmental issues with them, in Lansing even, and locally too. Of course, you can give money if you have any money to give. But actually volunteering your time to help the organization, whether it's to help with a mailing or going door to door or setting up an event.
Let me, you know, before you continue, mm-hmm. I only have a few minutes, but
right.
at the end, at the very, very end of the city council meeting on Wednesday, when they opened the floor up to everyone,
mm-hmm.
we had a parade, and I'm not kidding, four or five people, all talking about the same thing. They were bringing up the fact that whether it's irrelevant what they were saying, but they were talking about the new smart meters by DTE Energy. And it was like there was somebody would come up and talk about it, and they would sit down, and the next person would come up and talk about it, the exact same thing. And they just kept advancing their story, and council was like, listen, we're going to have a special session just for this. But I think this is what you're talking about. Go out there. These are people from Shelby Township, Livonia, Belleville. They're coming out to all the city council meetings and talking about their opinion and fact-based ideas about the smart meter.
So that's great.
Well, I mean, and that is that it takes time and it's difficult. You deal with a lot of people not listening, but it's getting your opinion out there.
This is the nature of the system we have, you know. Just my short list. Just I'll go quick.
Sorry
here. Run for office yourself.
Got
to pick a political party, probably, but maybe there's some nonpartisan things if you really think you have the time and you're willing to go to eat all those, you know, bad chicken dinners.
Hey, we'll have you on the journal if you're a challenger, for
that's
sure.
That's right, if you're a challenger. Of course, people, don't forget, write letters to newspapers, comment on various sites like Press and Guide, DearbornPatch.com. Although I have to say that, you know, a lot of these commentaries, they get, especially to Jack Lessenberry, and I was going to mention briefly about Lessenberry's editorial in the Metro Times this week. Well, here's the brief mention. You know, I think we're number one or number two in America for having children living in poverty by numbers. By the numbers, we have at least the second largest, if not the first. I'm looking at it now, but I can't see the number here. And it's increased tremendously in the last year.
Do they say what the poverty line is? Because I know that changes, obviously.
Well, it's usually about $40,000 for a family of four.
Okay.
Compared to 2000, there were 125,000 more poor kids in our state in 2010. Since then, we've cut at least 30,000 children off cash assistance, with more to follow.
But that wasn't because they were doing so well they were off cash assistance. It's because they changed the cash assistance guidelines. So you can only be on for this particular length of time. And even if you might still be needed. And I think they made exceptions for people that were severely handicapped. But that's it's not that the condition got better. It's that they changed the guidelines.
Yeah, obviously we have plenty of people, adults too, living in poverty.
Sure.
Because somebody stupidly responded to Lesemer and said, why don't the parents just give the kids more money?
What?
Jeez. You know, before you write these commentaries, you should put some thought into it. You know, you just got a lot of people that are gagging and choking when they read these things out of the idiocy of these comments. So so you should really wait for the essay, which takes some time and thought usually to be written. A lot of the comments are just so out of touch with any sort of reality or fact that boggles the mind. Anyway, you should read that this week. He does talk about Mitt Romney, and just talk about the plight of the kids in Michigan, so many of them living in poverty at this point. Last but not least, yes, you could do a petition drive, but Michigan's rules are that it would take so many votes to get an issue that would be voted on that you probably can't get enough signatures, certainly not yourself, or even with a large group, you'd have to hire people who's got money to do that in order to get enough signatures. Last but not least, and it just doesn't work anymore, I don't think, in our media environment, demonstrations, where you physically go, I know, like occupy a park or a street or whatever, that's okay for a one-day news story, but long-term efforts, basically demonstrations, don't change anything. The elected leaders, even if you're right in front of Lansing, the capital in Lansing, they don't care. They won't change their vote because you're out there with your picket signs, you know. No, it's not going to. I've got a lot of people left over from the 60s. Oh, let's go and march. Let's go and picket. It doesn't have any effect. It has some effect. Okay, everything has some effect. But almost no effect compared to the other
cold
things I mentioned.
There you go.
So get involved. And a lot of people, I think, are going to try to get involved. The Democrats weren't very well, in November we might pick up some seats, but not a lot of people will be up for re-election then. And we need the governor to be a Democrat, because finally, even if it's all Democratic House and Senate, we'd still need 2/3 to override the governor. So you need to have the governor be a Democrat, too, if you believe the Democrats are the answer. I was amazed how many people thought both parties were the problem. Yep, that's what I thought.
And that would make the exit poll asking people if they're independent that much more important.
Yeah.
Because you have to find – no, I agree. At first, I was like, what difference does it make? But it really does.
Yeah, two other polls. You know, one that's ongoing is that nationally, when people are asked, are you Democrat, Republican, or a independent – 60% say independent. So the majority of voters, people that usually do vote, are independents. Well, and the Rasmussen poll, last but not least, was done this week, comparing Barack Obama to all the Republican challengers. And they were polling not Republicans, registered Republicans, but the typical spread of voters, Democrats, independents, and so on. So in that pairing between Obama and the Republicans, how would the Republicans do? They would all lose to Obama at this point in time.
Sure.
Except for Ron Paul.
No kidding.
Ron Paul would beat Obama right now, even before he gets any ads nationwide.
Right.
And this was done objectively all across the U.S., random sample, but, you know, picked scientifically.